It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Turkish officials today said audio and video recordings from inside the Saudi consulate show Jamal Khashoggi met a violent end, his fingers severed before he was later killed, beheaded, and dismembered. During the alleged torture, the Saudi consul general, Mohammed Al-Otaibi, reportedly said, quote, "Do this outside, you're going to get me in trouble." Another voice on the recording reportedly says, "Shut up if you want to live when you return to Arabia." Today, Turkish investigators turned their sights on Otaibi's home, forensic experts searching his official residence in Istanbul. Otaibi returned to Saudi Arabia on Tuesday. In the Oval Office today, President Trump insisted he wants to know what happened to Khashoggi. And if Turkey has audio and video recordings of Khashoggi's alleged murder, he wants them.
We've asked for it, if it exists.
Are you surprised that they haven't turned it over?
No, I'm not sure yet that it exists. Probably does, possibly does. I'll have a full report on that from Mike when he comes back.
Mr. President.
That's one of the things that's going to be the first question I ask.
While the president is eager to get the real story, he is also urging patience, cautioning that people should not be pointing fingers at the Saudi leadership unless and until it's proven they were involved. In an interview with the Associated Press, President Trump likening it to the Kavanaugh confirmations. I think we have to find out what happened first, the president said. You know, here we go again with, you know, you're guilty until proven innocent. I don't like that. We just went through that with Justice Kavanaugh. And he was innocent all the way.
Well, that was John Roberts. That's part of his report from day before yesterday. Sandy Rios with you this morning. Everyone's talking about this disappearance and alleged murder of Jamal Khashoggi. And it's being presented as him being a journalist, an American resident, although not an American citizen. And the story goes that the Saudis brutally murdered him in their consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. So what's behind all of this? I don't pretend to know what all is behind it, but I want to tell you some things. Daniel Greenfield, who writes under the name Sultan Kish, he's been our guest before, has written a fascinating piece called The Ugly Terror Truth about Jamal Khashoggi, and I want to share it with you. In high school, Jamal Khashoggi had a good friend. His name was Osama bin Laden. "We were hoping to establish an Islamic state anywhere," Khashoggi reminisced. "We believed that the first one would lead to another, and that we would have a domino effect which could reverse the history of mankind." He and, of course, Osama bin Laden were leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, Khashoggi has been referred to as the lead of the head of the Muslim Brotherhood in Saudi Arabia. The media calls Khashoggi a journalist, but his writings from 80s Afghanistan read as jihadist propaganda, with titles like "The Arab Mujahideen in Afghanistan Too Exemplifies the Unity of Islamic Ummah." And when Osama bin Laden set up al-Qaeda, he called Khashoggi with details. When the 19 hijackers perpetrated the attacks of September 11, Khashoggi wrote that the Saudis would not, quote, give in to America's, quote, demands for unconditional condemnation and total cooperation. That's the real Khashoggi, writes Daniel, a cynical and manipulative apologist for Islamic terrorism, not the mythical martyred dissident whose disappearance the media has spent the worst part of a week raving about. And then he goes on to explain what the Muslim Brotherhood admires Hitler, seeks to impose Islamic law around the world. He said Khashoggi was not a supporter of freedom of the press. He complained in one of his Al Jazeera appearances that the Saudi government was allowing some journalists to actually report the truth. He says the media has made no secret of being on the Islamist side. It's not journalism. It's a political spin of the Islamist axis. axis. The media has reported every claim of victimhood by the Muslim Brotherhood and Qatar Al Jazeera propaganda arm, while giving as little attention as possible to victims of Muslim Brotherhood church bombings. Its coverage of Israel has been little more than terrorist propaganda since Osama was in diapers. Its coverage of the Khashoggi case is every bit as dishonest as its slanted attacks on the Saudi embargo of Qatar, as its propaganda about the wars in Yemen and Libya, and just as devoid of context. There's a lot more to this article. We'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read it, The Ugly Terror Truth About Jamal Khashoggi. But here's the thing. In plain English, it seems to me at this point, remember that the Turks under Erdogan are strong supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood. So they are joined at the hip with someone like Jamal Khashoggi, who now in his native Saudi Arabia is at odds with the leadership, with the prince, who is trying to reform, at least from all accounts, trying to reform the strong grip of the traditions of the Muslim Brotherhood on Saudi. Now, that doesn't mean that the prince is, you know, a Judeo-Christian Western democracy seeker. He's not. The Saudis routinely behead people, cut off their hands. This is their punishment. This is part of their Islamic law. They cut hands off if you have stolen something. They behead people for other offenses. They throw homosexuals off buildings. You know this, right? This is Islamic law. And both Erdogan in Turkey and the Saudi princes have allegiance to the same law. It's just that the Saudis are trying to back it up a bit. They're trying to cooperate with the West a little more, so they're trying to tap down some of their most objectionable practices, at least from the West point of view. Don't think they don't still embrace it. So you've got Islamists warring against each other, because the last thing they want to do, this is what they do. They're more mad at each other than they are actually at us. So this is a war against within Islam. And so what the press is reporting, that the double whammy here is that Jamal Khashoggi was not only a Muslim Brotherhood operative. I just explained that to you. That's horrible. Nobody's reporting that. But he also was allegedly a Washington Post journalist, they keep saying. I think he wrote occasionally for them. He's not really a journalist. He's an apologist for Islam. So you got the Washington Press Corps and the leftist establishment trying to spin this thing. It doesn't mean he wasn't killed in the consulate. I'm not saying that, but they're trying to spin it in the worst possible way. And I think the other part of this is that, of course, they want to hurt President Trump, because they always do, because President Trump has been very clear about our financial ties to Saudi. And it's going to hurt us if anything changes in our relationship, or if we go into this punishment mode with Saudi Arabia. Plus, the other part of this is that the Saudis are the ones that have the most leverage over Iran, which is one of the greatest threats in the Middle East. And that's, of course, the Shiite Muslims. So it's very complicated. But let me just say, this whole spin about Jamal Khashoggi is not honest. And they're trying to push the president back into a corner so that he will harm our relationship with the Saudi government, or the kingdom, because they love Iran. They don't love the Saudis. They got their hat in the other ring. They've got their money on the other horse. And so that's kind of what's going on. Sebastian Gorka is going to join us in a few minutes. We will talk about that briefly, but you will enjoy. We're going to talk about a lot of other things besides that, so I hope you'll stay tuned for that. I want to say, wow, I want to say just wow, your generous giving on this fall share-a-thon is just amazing. Could I say that just during this hour alone yesterday morning, let me put this in context. I think we set a record last year by going over 300 phone calls in an hour. Well, just this week, two days ago, we got 441 calls in an hour. So we thought that was great. But yesterday, we got 654 calls. Remember, I challenged you to reach 650? And we did. It's just amazing. We had 654 calls. We raised $61,000 of the total. And remember, there was an add-on. Someone who said they'd give $100 for each donation. That means that generous person, I hope they're not sorry they did this, is going to pay American Family Association another $121,000. Now, isn't that something? That's just because of your generosity. So I want to thank you. And if by some chance you did not have a chance to give yet, you can still do that. It's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Okay, I have a few things to tell you as quickly as I can. The elections, of course, are just charging upon us. They'll be a week from Tuesday. Interesting news. In the Senate races, Phil Bredesen, who is the Democratic opponent to Marsha Blackburn in the Senate race, I think Marsha has moved ahead of him. But the interesting thing is, he would not say how he felt to Brett Kavanaugh. He said if he was in the Senate, he'd vote to confirm him. But then two of his staffers confided that he was lying. And so that's not helped him in the polls. And so it looks like Marsha Blackburn has moved way ahead of him. Kristen Sinema, this is an interesting story. Andy McCarthy, of all people, weighed in on this race in Arizona. Kristen Sinema is running against Martha McSally. And Andy wrote a long article in National Review this week, which we'll put on our Facebook page. It's Kristen Sinema promoted a terrorist lawyer. So this is Andy's part of this. Remember, you know, I've said to you many times, because when Andy's our guest, I always say this. He was the prosecutor of the Blind Sheikh in the first World Trade Center bombing. And the Blind Sheikh had an attorney who was a radical Islamist. And Kristen Sinema did all she could to promote him and had this Islamist attorney. She promoted appearances of him all over college campuses. In fact, Abdul Rahman was the name of the Blind Sheikh. And this is what Andy writes. Regarding the United States, Abdul Rahman had urged Muslims everywhere to dismember their nation, tear them apart, ruin their economy, provoke their corporations, destroy their embassies, attack their interests, sink their ships, shoot down their planes, and kill them on land, at sea, and in the air. Kill them wherever you find them. That was the Blind Sheikh. And that's the one that Kristen Sinema thought was a hero and his attorney she promoted. So that's a pretty damning report about Kristen Sinema, who cleans up beautifully. She's a very pretty girl. She's very articulate. She's running against Martha McSally, and that's the seat that John McCain vacated. So that's really interesting. Plus, I believe that, you've heard this week that Heidi Heitkamp, of course, in North Dakota, who is the Democratic incumbent, is in a lot of trouble because they published an open letter targeting her rival, who is Republican Kevin Cramer, that ran in the Sunday paper last week talking about victims and Me Too survivors. And they printed a whole bunch of names of women and claiming that they were all sexual assault victims, rape survivors. But it turns out that wasn't true. Two things. Not only did they print these women's names without their permission, but they also put women's names on there who said they had never been assaulted. It wasn't true. And so Heidi Heitkamp is in a lot of trouble on that. I told you yesterday that Beto O'Rourke, we find out now that back in 2013, when he was serving in the Texas legislature, he was not allowed to join the Hispanic caucus because, in fact, he's not Spanish. I think that's pretty funny. He's not doing well against Ted Cruz right now, even though he's raised $38 million in the last few weeks. And then the Senator McCaskill, the incumbent in Missouri, is also, she's running against Josh Hawley, who's the Republican candidate. But now James O'Keefe, who was with Veritas Project, went underground with her staff and found out that she's absolutely lying by her own words to her constituents about her positions on gun rights. She's all in favor of restrictions. She just says people just can't know that. Also, her staffers admitted on tape that her policies are the exact same. She feels the same way as a Barack Obama on everything. It's just he can't come in and campaign for her because it would cause her to lose the election. So you see how this goes, don't you? All right. Well, listen, I hope you'll stay tuned. But again, thank you for your generosity this week on Share-a-thon. Stay tuned because coming up next, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. The name speaks for itself, right? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Dr. Days after Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi vanished while visiting the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, his friends fear the worst. Turan Kislaki says Turkish officials told him Khashoggi was killed at the consulate, adding his body was dismembered. Khashoggi's fiancé says he entered the consulate on Tuesday to get a marriage document and never came out. But Saudi officials say they have nothing to do with the journalist's disappearance and even took a TV crew on a tour of the consulate to show he isn't there. Khashoggi is a high-profile Saudi dissident living in self-imposed exile in the U.S. since last year. In November, he warned about what he called one-man rule, referring to Saudi Arabia's newly appointed crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman.
But one-man rule, as I said earlier, is bad. It always goes wrong in any country.
Khashoggi also wrote for publications like The Guardian and The Washington Post, which on Friday left a blank space where his column should have appeared, along with a headline, A Missing Voice.
Turkey's president says his country is studying CCTV footage taken at the consulate and airport. And Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman told Bloomberg News, Saudi Arabia has, quote, nothing to hide.
That was CBS Roxana Saberi, and that's probably one of the most interesting stories of the news cycle in the last few weeks. Sandy Rios back with you. The alleged journalist, he wrote occasionally, I don't think that was his full-time work, Jamal Khashoggi, disappearing in the consulate in Turkey, the Saudi consulate, never to come back, and now reports that he's been cut into pieces, and then demands that President Trump do something about this. Well, I can't think of anyone better to talk to us about national security than our next guest. You've seen him. You know him. His voice is just, you recognize his voice at the very least. Sebastian Gorka is a Fox News national security strategist. And, of course, before that, he was deputy assistant to President Trump for strategy. He has lectured at the U.S. Special Operations Command, the FBI's Counterterrorism Division, and the Green Berets. He's briefed the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and the National Intelligence Council. And the last time I think I talked to him was when his last book came out, which was Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War. Now he's written a great new book called Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies. And I have to say, Sebastian, even before you say a word about this, your endorsements are amazing. You've got endorsements from Sean Hannity, Dennis Prager, Judge Jeanine, Mark Levin, Victor Davis Hanson, one of my favorites, Rush Limbaugh, and Eric Trump. Can't get any better than that. Those are great endorsements. You must be very honored to have those men endorse your book.
I am, Sandy. I was blessed with, I don't think it gets much better than that. I'm waiting for my old boss, the president, to tweet about it. But other than that, from Sean Hannity to Rush Limbaugh to Mark Levin to Hanson, I mean, these are on the right. These are the people who are protecting the republic. So, yeah, very excited about Why We Fight and very excited after far too long to be back on the Sandy Rios show.
Oh, that's thanks, Sebastian. Well, it's nice to have you back. I want to ask you just a few questions about before your book is called Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies. And we want to talk about that. But I guess I want to start with this news story that I just we just heard the background on it. Jamal Khashoggi. There's a lot of pressure coming on President Trump to do something about this, to demand that the Saudis. This happened in Turkish soil at their consul, the Saudi consul there, if it happened. What do you think America's role is in something that's so complex and unknowable? I'd just like your thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, first things first, we have to dispense with the inaccurate reporting and the fake news. This man has disappeared. What happened to him, well, nobody knows. But the idea that this is an American journalist is just false. He's not an American. And he's not a journalist. This is a person who wrote commentary pieces now and again for various publications. And he's a Saudi national. Also, he has a less than salubrious past. He has very, very close links to the Muslim Brotherhood. My former colleague, Jordan Schachtel at Conservative Review, has extensively covered that. He's also the nephew of one of the largest arms dealers in the world, Khashoggi. So, there's more to this story than meets the eye. We have no evidence of some of the outrageous things that have been already posited. Now the Saudis are allowing access to the consulate. We'll see what that brings. But to put it into correct context, whatever happened to this man, he is clearly an individual who's been caught in the middle of a geopolitical war. So right now, in the Sunni Muslim world, so I'm not talking about the Shias, I'm not talking about the Persians, Iranians, but in the Sunni world, there is a geopolitical competition for which nation is going to control the Sunni Muslim world. Whether is it going to be the Saudis, where Islam was founded in the 7th century, or is it going to be Turkey under Erdogan, who has literally dismantled brick by brick the secular legacy of the Atatürk years that turned Turkey into one of our most important allies, one of our strongest NATO allies, and is now trying to create a neo-Ottomanist version of the Turkish state. So Khashoggi is basically has been caught up in the middle of that political fight.
It's interesting. As I read the story and got a little bit more acquainted with it and realized just in plain English, plain terms that people can understand, Sebastian, as I understand that Khashoggi is a Muslim Brotherhood supporter in every way. We know it's not a secret. Erdogan is also a Muslim Brotherhood supporter, but the Saudi prince is more, if we can believe this, on the scale of radical Islam, is less on board with the Muslim Brotherhood. So there's internal battles, as you're describing in much clearer terms than I am. And so the thing that struck me was that we've been fighting the Islamists here and we've been fighting them abroad. That battle has just gone quiet for us. And now they're having their own internal battles, it seems to me. So that the focus of their energy seems to be within their own tribe, as it were, rather than at us for right now. Would you agree with that?
Well, first things first, our fight with the jihadists began long before September 11th. So in my book, Why We Fight, I have four vignettes of American heroes that we've forgotten about all too readily. And one of them is Stephen Decatur, the youngest captain ever in the U.S. Navy. And I tell the story about how he led an amazing Marine Corps unit almost 200 years ago to recapture a U.S. vessel off the shores of Tripoli from the Barbary Pirates. And who were the Barbary Pirates? They were the first jihadis that we went to war with under President Jefferson's watch. So first things first, we've been fighting this war for centuries. And secondly, yes, with the arrival of President Trump, the caliphate of ISIS has been destroyed. Our military has been unleashed in ways that it never was under the outrageously dangerous Obama years, when we had leading from behind and strategic patience as pillars of U.S. foreign policy. And now there is very much a war inside the Muslim world for who's going to dominate. There's the question, who's going to dominate the Sunni? Is it Turkey? Is it Saudi Arabia? Is it somebody else? And then inside, between the two sects, who's going to dominate? Is Iran going to be able to continue spreading its version of Islam? Or are the Sunnis going to somehow manage, with our help, to put Iran back in its box or put the mullahs back in their box? That's the big question. So, yes, everything changed. Everything changed, Sandy, on January the 1st last year.
There's no question about it, Sebastian. When I think about what danger we were in from so many corners of the globe. You know, when I was growing up, communism was our big threat. I want to talk about that in a second with you more personally, because you certainly know about that from your personal experience. But we had one enemy that we focused on. But during the Obama years, enemies sprung up all over, you know, and I suppose it started in the Bush administration as well. The weak responses, I think you would argue, and I would too, the weak responses out of both administrations to places like North Korea and Iran just made them worse. But even speaking of Iran, look, I should let you say for sure, Iran was beating its chest and boasting and conquering. Now where is Iran?
Just look at the 8 years before President Trump became the commander-in-chief. With America, look, the Obama administration began with what? It began with a global, this is not my opinion, they admitted it, a global apology tour. President Obama traveled the world. In Cairo, he gave a speech with members of the Muslim Brotherhood given front row seats by the American administration. He went everywhere apologizing, saying all the ills of the world can be driven back, whether it's quote-unquote global warming or terrorism. At the end of the line, America is the problem and the cause of them. As a result, what did we see? We saw a retraction of American leadership, a denial of American leadership, and then the bad guys took advantage. Russia invaded its neighbor. It annexed Crimea from the Ukraine. The Chinese started to rebuild their military to build fake atolls, fake islands in the South China Sea to build its military bases. Iran was empowered by the Obama administration for more than $140 billion with a B dollars released to the biggest state sponsor of terrorism. Then we saw the rise of ISIS, the establishment of the new caliphate. So yes, I mean, one metric alone should tell you everything you need to know. Under the Obama administration, the world number, the global population of refugees skyrocketed to 65 million, Sandy. That is a historic record. We had less refugees in 1945 on the cessation of World War II, after the Holocaust, after 60 million people killed, after the devastation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We had less global refugees than we did on Obama's watch. So that is the incredibly dangerous world that Donald Trump inherited. And my book, Why We Fight, is an answer to what he needs to do about it and what he will do about it.
And what he has done about it. And we could talk about North Korea, but I think that's pretty evident. We don't even need to belabor that. But North Korea was such an imminent danger, even as of a year ago. And now they've just, I'm not saying the problem's solved, but we know that things have calmed down so much because President Trump, in his unorthodox manner, has pretty much tamed the beast, at least for now. And I said a minute ago that communism used to be our central enemy, Sebastian. There are a lot of people listening to us who won't understand that. I want to ask you, as a person whose family was so affected by that, why was communism such a threat to the world?
Because it was totalitarian and it had a global ambition. So just like fascism, just like Nazism, just like jihadism, communism was predicated on the belief that only one system can be the global system. Therefore, democracy, free market, capitalism is to be destroyed. And as long as you had the Soviet Union gobbling up country after country in Central Europe, in the Balkans, and then trying to spread its ideology into Asia, into Africa, the only thing that would stop it was the United States. And that was a true, you know, life or death battle. And this is the connective tissue. In my first book, Defeating Jihad, I tried to make the point that, you know, there is a connective tissue between Nazis, between communists and jihadis like Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And they may believe different things. They may worship the working class, an Aryan so-called super race, or the caliphate, but they are all totalitarian, which means either you surrender to them or they will kill you. And communism was very much of that ilk.
Do you think that, you know, we're seeing such boldness on the left, Sebastian, and it doesn't take much to draw lines between the modern day left and communist teaching, at least principles. So I'm just curious, as a guy whose family, your parents are both dead now, but your dad was suffered very much under the communist regime in Hungary. Is communism still a threat now? Do you kind of give? Would you? I know
of
we don't.
Course.
Yeah. So you would.
I mean, look at the fact that we have in the upcoming midterm election, 40 Democrat candidates proudly have declared themselves as socialists. This is 2018. We have people like Ocasio-Cortez who look at Venezuela as the model. We have sitting members of Congress on the Democrat side who are calling for the abolition of ICE, which protects all Americans. So, yes, socially, I'll be speaking this week at the Heritage Foundation on exactly this issue of the threat socialism faces. Think about one another. You know, it's a very simple metric, not my opinion. The Victims of Communism Foundation, an amazing organization here in Washington, did a survey in which 42% of millennials in America wish to live in a socialist state.
Sebastian, that's amazing. Let me interrupt you because we have to take a break. But when we come back, let's begin with that. Also, this is not new. We've been fighting communism in various forms and iterations in this country for decades. And you write a lot about Whitaker Chambers, who is an unknown person to most people listening, I think. So I'd like for you to talk to us about the threat as we've seen it before and experienced it in American history, how it ties into now. It's just really a fascinating story. Sebastian's book is Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apology. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What about General Mattis? Is he going to leave?
Well, I don't know. He hasn't told me that. I have a very good relationship with him. I had lunch with him 2 days ago. I have a very good relationship with him. It could be that he is. I think he's sort of a Democrat, if you want to know the truth. But General Mattis is a good guy. We get along very well. He may leave. I mean, at some point, everybody leaves. Everybody. People leave. That's Washington.
Yes, it is Washington. My guest is Sebastian Gorka. No one would know it better than he does. He was with the president as a deputy assistant for strategy, and there was a purge of, from my perspective, the really good guys in the White House, and the really bad guys actually took their place, and then they were purged. So now we have some really good guys there, including former Ambassador John Bolton. Sebastian Gorka is my guest. He has written a new book called Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies. Sebastian, I know that you still watch what's happening in the West Wing very closely. What do you think about what might be happening in the White House in regard to staff changes? Can you say anything about that?
Well, I can. I mean, my response is always the same. People need to stop obsessing about, you know, palace intrigue. It's such garbage news. You know, this is the toughest job in the world, whether you're, you know, the Secretary of Defense, or whether you're in a lower position like myself, or whether you're, you know, a UN ambassador. These positions chew you up and spit you out. The idea that it was a big deal that Nikki Haley decided to move on after 2 years, it doesn't matter who you work for, whether it's Bill Clinton, whether it's Ronald Reagan, this is the nature of the beast. So, you know, I resigned for a specific reason. You know, you rightly noted, when I was there, non-MAGA individuals, people who really weren't on the Trump train, were in ascendance, especially H.R. McMaster, and I decided it's easier to support the president from the outside, and he agrees with me. We stayed in touch. And now, with John Bolton's arrival, with Mike Pompeo moving from CIA to state, you know, we have an incredible, you know, MAGA team in place, and if the Secretary of Defense is replaced, yeah, that's how things work. So, you know, it's not worth a lot of printing. But of course, the fake news industrial complex loves to spin these conspiracy theories.
Well, I have to say, as kind of a person on the inside, I greet this news with heartened, because we must get people inside the Trump administration who support him, and more importantly, support the things he supports, which is the protection of America. He is the most serious commander in chief we've had in decades, Sebastian. He's serious about his role.
You don't have to tell me.
Yeah, I know.
This is a man who doesn't talk about red lines, but when we saw the intelligence, you know, I can't go into details, but when we saw the intelligence of what was happening in Syria and what they were preparing to do, he didn't talk about it, he didn't bluster over chocolate cake with the the premier of China. He launched 59 cruise missiles to attack that Syrian air base. So, yes, whether it's fighting for American workers with new trade deals, whether it's standing, you know, right up to the threats we face from Iran, from Russia, from China, or whether it's working to finally, after 63 years, bring peace to the Korean, 65 years, finally bring peace to the Korean Peninsula. This is a man who only cares about two things. He doesn't care who you voted for. You could have voted for Hillary. You could have been a Bernie supporter. Utterly irrelevant to Donald J. Trump. If you're an American living here, he wants you to be safe, and he wants you and your family to prosper, and that's why we are where we are today. Biggest economy in U.S. history, lowest unemployment in 50 years, and our friends are finally being treated as our friends again, like Israel, and our enemies, they're worried, and that's a good thing, Sandy.
You know, one of the points you make in your book, which I think we at least need to give a mention to it because it's so important, you talk about the will to win, Sebastian. And I was thinking, you know, with the release of Andrew Brunson this weekend, if that isn't one of those examples, now this is not war, it's not taming your enemy, but in a way it is, because President Trump really stood down with Erdogan over this release, with the will to win. So make your broader point on that for me.
Yeah, that's why the book Why We Fight includes these vignettes. So I did a strategic analysis of all the threats you face, China, Russia, ISIS, and so forth, and what the president's going to do about them. But I interspersed those with these stories of great American heroes for the last 200 years. And, you know, Chesty Puller is in there, a Marine Corps legend who almost single-handedly turned around the war in the Pacific so that we could finally win. I talk about Captain Eugene Red McDaniel, who spent 6.5 years in the Hanoi Hilton as a prisoner of war, never lost faith in Jesus, never lost faith in America, is a true American hero. I write about my dad, who suffered at the hands of the secret police. He is a child who suffered under fascism, under Nazism. Then as a man, he was arrested, tortured, and imprisoned by the communists. So, you know, that's the will to win. We never give up, just like Justice Kavanaugh. And that's why I included this chapter on Whittaker Chambers, who was Judge Kavanaugh before Kavanaugh was even born.
Well, we need to talk about that because that's a part of our history that most people don't know. The kids are not certainly going to learn that in their textbooks, right, as you know, Sebastian. So we said earlier, and we'll repeat, that the battle against communism, which is really what we have as we see Antifa on the streets, as we see Hillary Clinton talking about incivility, the student of Saul Alinsky, the radical who was really a communist, as we see Barack Obama with his communist mentor, we have a battle against communism still. But it happened, it was really raging in much the same way, maybe not on the streets, but back in the 50s. Tell us about who Whittaker Chambers was, Sebastian, and at least a bit of his story.
Of course. So this is the last hero story in Why We Fight. This is a man who was such a hardcore communist that he was part of the communist underground here in America in the 1930s. He was the key courier, the man who carried the messages from the Kremlin to the hidden moles, the Soviet agents inside the U.S. government. Then, during World War II, when Hitler made a pact with Stalin, he saw the light. He went into hiding with his family. He realized the evils of communism. And then after the war ended, he realized he has a duty as an American, as a believer in the Republic, to tell the government who all the agents are inside the administration that he had dealt with, who he was the courier for. And one of them was Alger Hiss, incredibly high-ranking individual during the war, was there at Yalta, the negotiations to close the war. And he told the FBI, he told the White House, nobody was interested. And then finally, he tells Congress, and a guy you may have heard of called Richard Nixon gets interested. And then there are hearings on Capitol Hill, the first ever televised hearings. And Whittaker Chambers, in front of the world, says, I was a communist. I'm now a believer in the American way. And Alger Hiss, a darling of the left, was and is a communist subversive. and I can prove it. Al Jazeera denied it, and the left unleashed their attack dogs. They accused Whitaker Chambers of being an alcoholic, a homosexual. They accused him of being responsible for the death of his brother. All lies. But he never gave up. He stood up for the truth. Eventually, his name was cleared. Al Jahis went to prison for perjury, and then the Venona decrypts of Soviet signals intelligence proved without a doubt that Al Jahis was, in fact, a Soviet agent. So if anybody was surprised or disgusted at what happened to Justice Kavanaugh, open a history book, because Whitaker Chambers in 1948 was Kavanaugh before Kavanaugh was even born.
And to sort of go on with that story, Richard Nixon, who was the young congressman who got interested in that and sort of led the charge, was sort of the person who led the charge trying to bring out Whitaker Chambers' testimony, was, yep, many would say, Sebastian, that the reason he was targeted when he became president and so thoroughly destroyed, and he was, I watched it happen, was because of his participation in that trial.
Because of his incredible commitment to protecting America from a real communist threat, that's why he had to be taken out. Look at what, it was wrong, it was illegal, but it was a bungled burglary. That's all the Watergate is, a bungled burglary. What do we know about the Obama administration? What do we know about Hillary Clinton? It wasn't a bungled burglary. It was the use of a Russian propaganda file paid for by Hillary and the DNC to acquire an illegal FISA surveillance warrant against at least one member of the Trump campaign to build a dossier to undermine a presidential candidate. And then what happened? James Comey leaked its existence to his friends in the media to undermine the president-elect. I mean, that's political espionage involving dozens of people at the highest level of the Obama administration. It makes Watergate look like an argument in a pre-K school.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And that brings me to something a little bit that pertains to the now, about what people can do. As we look at this 2018 midterm coming up, Sebastian, there is so much at stake. So let me ask you, since you're a national security expert, what's at stake in terms of national security with this midterm election?
Everything. Absolutely everything. Look at what has been achieved in less than 2 years. Incredible things. ISIS, NATO, the border, the economy. All of it is on the ballot. Because the Democrats have openly admitted, the Democrat Party have admitted, that if they win, they intend to use the tools of Congress to undermine and sabotage the president, to literally put a wrench in the works to stop the Make America Great Again agenda. So whether it's the incredible economic gains we've had, the victories against our enemies, whether it's MS-13, whether it's jihadists, it doesn't matter, all of it will be in danger. And that's why this election, November 18, is in fact much more important than November 16. Everybody says this is the most important election in your life. This time, it's actually objectively true, because the president is only one man. He may be the most powerful man in the world, but he must have the requisite support on Capitol Hill from Republicans in the House and the Senate. And that's why everybody who's listening to the show, get out there on social media. Support the president. Follow me on Twitter, @SebGorka. Follow the president. Be a force multiplier. And don't just you go to vote. Get others to vote at the polling station. Down-ticket Republican. If they're going to stay at home, then they in danger. They are part of the problem. They are endangering the president's agenda.
Yes, and it's coming to them. The threat is coming to their community, even if they don't realize it. Sebastian, when we look at the world stage, which you and I did a tiny bit at the top of this discussion, it is pretty absolutely jaw-dropping to me to see what's happened with North Korea, what's happened with Iran, what's happened with Turkey even, because Erdogan was becoming so bold and careless and you know, this fake coup and all these thousands killed. So, but now we have China. I think of China, you know, China has hardly been tamed at all for decades. Even under the Bush administrations, there was the, you know, policies that enriched them, made their military strong. That's the one tiger that I'm not sure how we can, I don't want to say take down, but tame. Is it possible in your mind to actually tame China and bring them back to where they should be in the world stage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't use the word tame. I'd use the word contain. They have a plan to supersede us, to replace us. It is called One Belt, One Road. They wish to become the most powerful nation in the world and oppose America. But the president understands that. We gave him a series of classified briefings at the beginning of the administration. He understands the threat, and he knows that the only strategic threat we face is really China. We will deal with everybody else. So it is possible because China needs us more than we need them. And at the end of the day, we are the most powerful nation the world has ever seen, and they would lose. They would lose rapidly in a shooting war with us. So that's why they instigated an economic war with us, a trade war, decades ago. So, yes, it is possible, but it's only possible because Donald J. Trump is the commander-in-chief.
All right, Dr. Sebastian Gorka has been our guest. The book is Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apologies. This has been Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.